Hello, and welcome to a new season of All in the Mind. I'm Lynne Malcolm. This week, the ABC marks Mental Health Week. We'll bring you special programming to get us to talk more about mental health, to give money to fund research, and encourage people to seek support. You can go to the ABC's Mental Health Week website to find out more. abc.net.au/mentalas. You can also find a link on the ABC's front page or from the All in the Mind site. In today's program, we focus on the intensive research efforts to uncover some of the mysteries of the devastating and stigmatised brain disease, schizophrenia.
I feel like I have dared the world to stigmatise me. I say to the world, I am here, I have schizophrenia, but I'm still a person, I still need love, and I can interact intelligently with other people.
Richard Schweitzer was diagnosed with schizophrenia just over a decade ago. Up until then, he'd had a happy, outgoing childhood, did well at school and sport, played the bass guitar, and had plenty of friends. But when he was in his early 20s, in the third year of his law degree, things started to go awry.
It was a strange time. I felt cut off from the world. I felt like I was experiencing the world through a blanket, like I was down the end of a long hallway and the world was at the other end. I remember having strange thoughts, thinking that a friend of mine was the devil, and I was lucky enough to be able to look at those thoughts and say they're irrational and they're not normal, but they still existed nonetheless. And I also had a pervasive sense of fear about what was happening to me and fear that I might do something to harm myself or to harm a friend. I definitely imagined a voice in my head, and that was a critical voice.
It must have been very frightening. I think your parents found you in your room distressed.
That's right. I had seen a counsellor at Sydney University and he had noted down auditory hallucinations, and that set off for me alarm bells. And I remember going home, I went to my room, I shut the door, shut all the windows, shut the blinds and cried on my bed because I thought something's going wrong. And then I visited my GP and she said, take this medication and come back and see me tomorrow, but don't look at what the medication does. Of course, my mum looked on the internet to see what it does and it said risperidone used in the treatment of schizophrenia. And that for me was my ultimate fear, because having led quite an academic life and one where I relied on my mind, to lose control of it or to lose it was my greatest fear. So finding that out became the worst night of my life.
And you must have felt like you had a double life in a way, that on one hand you had these terrifying symptoms, on the other hand you had quite a rational mind.
Yes, and it was a very strange feeling being in my rational mind and feeling the irrational thoughts encroaching upon me. I felt that I had to fight them. Luckily now I'm on a medication called clopine, and that has gotten rid of all the essential symptoms. It is one of the stronger and more effective antipsychotics, but it has the unfortunate side effect for a small number of people that it lowers their white blood cell count. So I have to do blood tests every month.
Richard Schweitzer, and more from him later. Schizophrenia is a complex and poorly understood group of mental disorders, thought to affect 1 in 100 Australians. It's now known that genetic factors play a role, and researchers are slowly making progress in understanding its causes in order to improve treatment and hopefully to find a cure. For neuroscientist Professor Cindy Shannon Weikert, it's been a 30-year quest to get a clearer picture of the disease, and her driver has been a heartfelt and personal one.
What led me to study schizophrenia is watching it unfold in my twin brother. It started from seeing him not being able to pay attention in math class. We were in trigonometry together, and he was staring out the window. And I thought that was odd because him and I were competing for top grades in the class, and we were trying to outdo one another. And I thought, well, why isn't he paying attention? And then I became aware of him begging my mom to allow him not to go to school because the kids were picking on him. I remember my mom like rocking him at night because he was so afraid. He started to spend a lot of time in his room and building strange geometric shapes on pyramids and putting, I guess it was some form of wires together, connecting these bizarre, colorful shapes that he put all over his room. And we said, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm receiving messages. And then he would say really weird things. Like as we were sharing our 17th birthday cake, he said, you know, you're not my twin sister. You're the daughter of the devil. And things turned from bad to worse one night when he shoved my mom up against the wall and started threatening her, started choking her. And my mom said, call the police. And then I had to watch my twin being taken away in handcuffs. And he was telling the police that my mom wasn't his mom, that his real mom was Yoko Ono. And you knew that he wasn't in touch with reality. Then he got the diagnosis of schizophrenia. And you know, it took me probably years to realize what this really meant, this diagnosis, and to then say, well, I'm going to have to study the brain. And I felt really called to try to help him and others like him that suffer from this disease and to help the doctors actually have more options for treatment for these people.
Cindy Shannon Weikert is professor at the University of New South Wales, researcher at Neuroscience Research Australia, and Macquarie Group Foundation Chair of Schizophrenia Research. Whilst current antipsychotic medication is effective and essential for many people with schizophrenia, there's an urgent need to improve treatment options, according to Professor Jayashri Kulkarni.
There are still a significant number of people who have schizophrenia who don't respond to the current treatments. And the advent of the second generation, or what's colloquially known as the atypical antipsychotics, have been good in that they've actually helped people to improve in symptoms, particularly the positive symptoms of schizophrenia, which are the terrible auditory hallucinations or hearing voices, or the delusional systems where somebody might believe they're being persecuted and followed by the CIA or something like that. But there are still problems with what's known as the negative symptoms of schizophrenia. And these are the symptoms in which people have difficulties getting motivated, getting out of bed, getting enough creativity or abstract thinking to allow them to move into more education or continue with jobs and relationships. Plus also some of the more cognitive or higher thinking type of symptoms that hold people back from full recovery and having a really good quality of life. And that's where the treatment of schizophrenia needs more research, needs new avenues and new ways of approaching those particular symptoms. Because the bottom line is, we must not just say that somebody requires treatment of the symptoms. What we really need to be able to provide for our patients is that level of treatment that allows them to have an excellent quality of life.
Jayashri Kulkarni, Director of the Monash Alfred Psychiatry Research Centre in Melbourne. Antipsychotic medication calms the extreme symptoms of schizophrenia for many, but the side effects can have a big impact on physical health. Weight gain can lead to heart disease and diabetes, reducing the life expectancy of people with schizophrenia sometimes by 10 to 20 years. Cindy Weikert believes that antipsychotics are a band-aid and not getting to the root causes of the disease, which are now fairly widely accepted as being biological. I asked her if she believed schizophrenia is caused by a problem with brain development.
I would say that that was my starting point 30 years ago, thinking about it from the perspective of that my twin was normal, healthy, and then something happened in adolescence where his development got derailed. However, I now think that there's also a neurodegenerative component, at least in some people with schizophrenia, where there is gray matter volume loss. There is neuroinflammation. So there are cellular and molecular changes, but they're more subtle. And so 100 years ago, when they looked under the microscope, they didn't find any evidence of neuronal death or damage. So they thought that there was not a biological and cellular basis for schizophrenia. It was all based on, well, we came up with a schizophrenogenic mother, right? We came up with the environment or the context where it was all psychological, not really, you know, it was in the mind and not in the brain.
And Cindy Weickert thinks that the key to a deeper understanding of schizophrenia is the realisation that it's not one single disease. And this is driving her research approach.
I think the major advance that we have with modern molecular tools is to really carve up schizophrenia into several biological root causes. A lot of psychiatrists working in schizophrenia will know that not every person with schizophrenia presents in the same way, looks the same. You know, we're not just dealing with one disease, but we're dealing with four or five, or we don't even know how many diseases. So it makes it a bit less manageable in terms of research design, but this is the direction we really need to go. But what I really am hopeful about is that we now have the modern molecular tools to dissociate these biological pathways. And once we know that, we can identify which biological form of schizophrenia a person has. We can tailor the therapy for that individual's type of schizophrenia. So my approach is to define different pathologies in subsets of individuals. For example, we know that about 5% of the people that get the diagnosis with schizophrenia have been identified to have an antibody that attacks the brain. And when you actually treat and get rid of that antibody in the blood, their schizophrenia is resolved. So there is an opportunity to perhaps reverse the course of schizophrenia in a small wedge of the pie. If we took a big pie as 100% of the people with schizophrenia, and we say there may be a small segment that can be targeted with this particular therapy and reverse the course of the disease, that's very powerful. What we found here in the Sydney laboratory is there is about 40% of the people with schizophrenia that appear to have a more generalized low level of inflammatory changes. So normally we didn't think of the brain as having any inflammatory changes or immune molecules. And the way immune molecules signal with one another is to use cytokines. And so it was thought cytokines were just used by blood cells, but we found increase in cytokines in the actual brain. And so that suggests there's inflammatory changes, and this is occurring in about 40% of the people with schizophrenia. There's about 20% of the people with schizophrenia that have a blunted response to estrogen, so they wouldn't have the neuroprotection and the anti-inflammatory benefit of circulating estrogen in helping their brain. So the idea would be that we would stimulate their estrogen pathways, and this could be both in males and females.
Cindy Weickert. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynne Malcolm, with a special episode to mark our contribution to Mental Health Week. Today, we're hearing from some passionate researchers who are making headway through the puzzle of schizophrenia. As Cindy Weickert mentioned, hormones may provide clues in some cases. Professor Jayashree Kulkarni from the Monash Alfred Psychiatry Research Centre has focused on women's mental health for the past two decades. She believes hormones, such as estrogen, play a significant role in the mental health of women throughout their adult lives. Her team recently published the results of the world's largest randomised control study of estradiol, the common form of estrogen, as a treatment for women with schizophrenia. 183 women of childbearing age, currently taking antipsychotic medication, participated. One group was treated with 100 micrograms of estradiol, another with 200 micrograms, and a third was given a placebo.
And what we discovered is in this trial, which was held over 3 months, that the women who received the 200 micrograms of estradiol and the 100 micrograms of estradiol made the best recovery in terms of their positive symptoms of psychosis and some improvement in some of the other symptoms of psychosis. So the results were pretty good in the sense that we were trying to find a treatment for people who didn't respond to standard antipsychotic treatment. So these are people, women, who, despite having antipsychotics on board, still were pretty unwell. This is the group that I was talking about that, you know, we need to have strategies for how do we help people who haven't responded to current treatments that are out there.
So what's your feeling about whether estrogen as a treatment can work well on its own without the antipsychotics?
Yes, that's a step that, you know, we're looking at because it's obviously got ethical implications. We would not want anyone to not take the recommended medication treatment for psychosis. But there are particular groups that we know of women who really had the onset of their psychosis after they had the babies. You get the story of someone, she'd been going along quite well, no particular problems, and she was okay until basically the postnatal episode. Then there was the onset of psychosis and full-blown psychosis symptoms with hearing voices, often the paranoid delusional beliefs that sometimes revolved around the newborn, sometimes not, and great problems with returning to a level of functioning that she had enjoyed beforehand, and that has ramifications for the next generation. So a number of the women in our estrogen trial who made very dramatic recoveries with the addition of estrogen actually had that story in their background. Now, they're not saying that, you know, the women who made recoveries all had that story in their background, but it is something that we're looking at in terms of thinking more about in a woman who develops postnatal psychosis, whether in fact we should be using estradiol as a first-line treatment to see if we can hit those symptoms in the early stages. So that's a group that I'm particularly keen to be looking at, and we've got some plans there. So it is a possibility that in the future, with careful ethical consideration, we will be looking at estradiol treatment on its own. We're also looking at different estradiol treatments. There's a new form of estrogen that's around, the selective estrogen receptor modulators. It's a bit of a mouthful. They're so-called SERMs, S-E-R-M. These are brain estrogens. They are more effective in the brain and don't have the same body effects that the straight estradiol does. So estradiol's problem, while we think it's very effective in the brain, the problem in long-term use is we have to be concerned about its impact on breast tissue, ovarian and uterus tissue. So the new SERMs have their effect more in the brain and don't impact on breast, uterus and ovaries. So this is another option, and we've actually got a study that we're hoping to publish soon which shows that there was a good result in use of the SERM, again, on top of antipsychotic medication in women with schizophrenia.
So the key message here really is the potential impact of hormones on mental health. What can these findings, particularly in schizophrenia, what clues can they give you to the causes of schizophrenia and therefore possibly new hope for prevention in the future?
The whole area of the interaction between what we used to know as reproductive hormones such as estrogen, and they're not just reproductive, they do have that role, but they are potent neurosteroids. So they have potent brain effects, and there is a whole area of research that is opened up about looking at the impact of estradiol and other hormones in the brain and, you know, actually impacting on brain structures. So it's quite a potent hormone in the brain. And your question is a really good one because it is actually about saying, hey, let's look at this differently. There's lots of clues that might help us. Schizophrenia is predominantly a post-pubertal disease. And there's something that goes on in puberty that pushes the perhaps genetically vulnerable individual into developing the illness. So again, you have this really major shift in hormones, reproductive hormones, impacting on the brain during puberty. It could be that in a very vulnerable individual, there might be a role for intermittent estrogen use as a prevention or as a protection for women. And of course, the advent of the selective estrogen receptor modulators, the so-called brain estrogens, means that we can use them in men because they don't have the feminizing effect in the body, but they do have the effect in the brain. So there's a whole range of research that I think is really exciting and opens up new avenues for both the understanding of schizophrenia and why it happens and how it happens, as well as the options for new treatments to improve the quality of life for people who have schizophrenia.
So how does the experience of working with many women living with schizophrenia affect your attitude and, I guess, your motivation to continue on with the research?
I'm always absolutely in awe of a number of the patients that we see, the women with schizophrenia. In our work, what we do is spend quite a lot of time actually trying to empower the woman herself, who's got a lot of resources, internal resources and skills and knowledge and wisdom, to bring that to bear for her recovery. And the hormone work is often very empowering for women because they will say things like, aha, I always knew that, or yes, of course, that's the way to go. So it's really a privilege to work with people who have an incredible resilience in the face of such adversity.
So the approaches taken by researchers Jayashree Kulkarni and Cindy Weickert are based on the knowledge that there are many different biological causes and types of schizophrenia. So to be most effective, treatment needs to be tailored to individuals. Cindy Weickert.
You know, that's a really helpful way to conceptualize it. What we're trying to do definitely is personalize the treatment of schizophrenia and to go beyond just antipsychotics. So we're saying, can we target different pathways, not just dopamine D2 receptor, which all the new drugs for schizophrenia have been based on that one chance discovery, but to use other molecular targets in other pathways like hormones or immune factors? And are we going to get unique and novel benefit? I think we're really looking to say, well, if we use an adjunctive novel therapy, can we get more benefit? And for who?
As more biological clues about the causes and types of schizophrenia are discovered, Cindy Weickert sees the potential to effectively treat schizophrenia with drugs that are already used for other physical illnesses.
So we're borrowing drugs from endocrinology, cancer, and immunology for the treatment in a psychiatric disease. Because, you know, you go to look at what's involved in developing a whole new drug from scratch, and I think it's estimated to be $1 billion, and most of them fail because they're not found to be safe in people. So what I guess I'm suggesting is if we think outside the box and think a little more creatively and identify the biological root causes, and then we can take advantage of discoveries in other fields and apply them to psychiatry. But of course, in a careful, measured, step-by-step fashion, and the studies need to be done to see if we actually only even treated transiently and gave the brain a chance to heal itself, could we then rely on an individual's own resilience? Because we also have evidence that even in these people that are undergoing high inflammation, there is a repair attempt that's occurring in their brain. And for some reason, this repair attempt is failing. So perhaps if we could just let the brain give it a bit of a break, even for a few months, perhaps the brain's own resilience or the brain that can heal itself or change itself, those mechanisms could kick in. That would be my hope. So they don't have to be on the drugs for the rest of their lives.
Richard Schweitzer is now on an antipsychotic medication which deals with the most disruptive symptoms of schizophrenia. But one of the side effects is that he needs to sleep 12 to 13 hours a night. And there are still other challenges.
The most difficult thing now is the sense of self-monitoring, the sense that I always have to be on the lookout just in case a schizoid symptom appears again. Apart from that, the sleeping is a problem, sleeping so much. I miss out on opportunities that I could otherwise have.
How do you manage what you imagine other people's judgment is of you and your illness?
I try to be upfront about it. I try to not let it interrupt my life too much. You know, the anxiety and the depression occasionally means that I won't go out at a time when my friends are going out.
And do you have any other talking therapy along with the medication that's helpful?
I have on two occasions sought psychological help from a psychologist. I got a funny story about the first one, which I'll relate to you. I was having difficulty with the word schizophrenia. The word was upsetting me. And so the psychologist said, say the word banana 40 times. So I said, banana, 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 banana. And after you do that, the word ceases to have its impact. So that helped me a great deal. The other thing that has happened to me at times is I've had a word stuck in my head and I saw a different psychologist and she helped me with some meditative processes to deal with unwanted thoughts. So that would include guided meditation, also facing the fears that were associated with the words that would repeat in my head.
What role can talking therapies and non-drug interventions play? How important and significant is that aspect of treatment?
For some people, it can be very helpful. Some people will respond to psychoanalysis. There's also a program that I'm aware of in Perth. It's CBT to recognize and deal with your voices. And so I guess making friends with your voices. I think for cognitive remediation, they can be helpful, but it's a bit like brain training. But I think that they're always going to fall short if we don't also try to treat the biological root causes at the same time. Because it's just like if you're not in a healthy environment and you're not able to grow and sustain and nurture those synaptic communications in your brain, you're not going to sustain the new learning and you're not going to necessarily derive the most benefit from those opportunities. So I think both things need to work hand in hand. So we need to develop better treatment algorithms from the perspective of psychosocial support, along with non-traditional pharmacological agents that have been, like I said, repurposed.
Another factor in the development of schizophrenia is the impact of genetics. A large, world-first DNA study of schizophrenia published in Nature earlier this year has identified over 100 genetic regions associated with the disease, and some are linked with regions previously identified with autoimmune disease. Cindy Weickert.
There's quite a bit for a neuroscientist and for immunologists in the latest genetics findings. I think one of the things for me that's a bit frustrating about the genetics is there's been a lot of hype since they cloned the human genome in the year 2000, and we've been looking to the geneticists to guide us. I think one of the difficulties with just thinking about an overall genetics approach is they use that one diagnostic term, schizophrenia. And so if there's multiple root causes, then you really have to be able to understand the genetics of a particular slice of the pie, for example.
So in your lifetime, do you have hope that there's going to be big progress?
Yeah, well, in my lifetime, I'm sure that there'll never be a cure for schizophrenia. I think that there's going to be several cures for schizophrenia. My vision is to have the doctors, the clinicians, and the scientists, and the consumers and carers all working together. You know, if you realize that the moment of time that we're in, that we finally have these modern molecular tools that we can change the shape and the course of their treatment, and they can be actively involved in this, and they can contribute to the revolution to be able to demand better outcomes. But if we're not united in this quest, then who are the politicians going to listen to? And I think we need to get behind one another and support one another, and that's what's going to make a difference.
How important is it that you work with and have personal contact with people who actually have the experience of the disease?
I think when I listen to the carers and consumers, because I have that shared lived experience, I have that same level of frustration. I understand why they have been reluctant to want to try new things, because I think in terms of research that's been done to date, the big breakthrough was to change from typical antipsychotics to atypical antipsychotics. But then they caused metabolic syndrome, diabetes. People with schizophrenia are dying 10 to 20 years younger because of cardiac arrest. We're not really taking on board the physical issues. You know, my brother got diagnosed with diabetes and he died of cardiac arrest. So I understand the urgency. I don't feel I have this privilege to just sit in my ivory tower and think up experiments that are creative and will, you know, advance theoretical concepts. I want to do the research that's going to make a difference in the here and now and the people's lives today, if I can. It's a big ask, but I feel that it takes a certain level of commitment and drive and passion. And I think if you can organize people, then we've got a real chance.
You've worked quite closely with Cindy Weickert. Mm. Tell me about that relationship.
Cindy is a lovely person. Her heart is almost as big as her mind. She had a brother who had schizophrenia who has passed away, and I feel very close to her. And I can see the immense dedication, intellectual dedication she has given to the cause of finding, if not cures for schizophrenia, means of reducing it and understanding the way it appears and manifests itself in the human brain.
What do you think you've contributed to her understanding and her work?
I think that I might have given her hope. I don't want to speak on her behalf, but I think she sees in me the hope that there are people who can get by with schizophrenia and still achieve things in their life that are positive and impressive. I wonder sometimes if, you know, she sees something of her brother in me.
Cindy Weickert speaks very highly of Richard Schweitzer too, particularly about his bravery and his intelligence. He admits that he's been affected cognitively by his illness, but he started from a high position. His dedication to raising awareness about schizophrenia has led him to start a PhD at Sydney University.
So what I am looking at is the disruption and then the reformation of identity amongst people who are diagnosed with schizophrenia. So I'm looking at how they feel about themselves, how they understand themselves, how they project themselves, and how they ultimately re-establish themselves in a social context. So having the illness has given me an insight. So, for example, I'll read an account of somebody who was hearing voices or was paranoid and they felt lost in the land of psychosis. I can identify with that. And that's a great advantage, I think, in studying the subject. More than anything else, I want to help people. I have a message for the world. Mental illness is clearly an abnormality. It's something that's gone wrong in the brain chemistry, and it manifests itself in behaviour which is abnormal. But when you look at the history of humanity and you look at the epidemiology of populations, mental illness is a normal thing. Schizophrenia happens to 1% of the population. Anxiety and depression can affect people. I've heard figures of 1 in 5. So on one level, mental illness is an abnormality, but at another level, it is an aspect of being human. I think once we recognise that, it will help us accept and understand people who perhaps would have made us uncomfortable before.
Thanks to Richard Schweitzer for sharing his story with us. Go to the All in the Mind website for links and more information about today's program. For more about Mental Health Week across the ABC, go to abc.net.au/mentalas or go to the ABC front page to find the link. You'll learn how to help fund research, and there's more about programs coming up over the next week. More research is the only way we'll find a cure for schizophrenia. Production was by Diane Dean and Russell Stapleton. I'm Lynne Malcolm. Do join me again next week. Bye for now.